Welcome, everyone, to the Screamcast, episode 93. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Hey, Sean.
BJ is unable to join us today, unfortunately, but she should be back next week.
Hopefully.
She should be, hopefully. But, yeah, our recording schedule is going to be crazy because we're going to start getting, you know, Brad's been kicking butt and taking names with some guests. Super excited about some of these guests we have coming up the next couple weeks. So our recording schedule may be crazy, but I'm pretty sure, BJ will be able to join us. It's always a better show with her on it. I think. I mean, because otherwise it's just me and you talking.
Yeah, and who wants to hear that?
Today, kick-ass show, we're going to be talking to Mike McPadden, the author of Heavy Metal Movies. Mike McBeardo McPadden, I should say. It's on the book. You got to say it. So we'll be talking to him in just a little bit, so stay tuned for that. But first, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Cool.
You have nothing.
I have zero, dude. Okay. I've been way too busy. I honestly have not watched anything other than rewatching the movies that we have spoken about.
Yeah, and for me, trying to get those in was crazy. I had a busy, crazy week too. The only thing that I wanted to talk about, I did watch Goosebumps because that came out on Blu-ray. I did watch it again for the second time. And
is it any good?
Still holds up. It's fun. It's a fun family movie. All the kids loved it. My daughter saw it the second time. She loved it again. My son, who's normally a scaredy cat, the middle child, he had fun with it. And my youngest, Noah, whom you all know, he's
like co-host of the show.
He adored it. Like, he had so much fun with it. There's a scene in there, no spoilers here, but he got very concerned for what was happening to a character. So to see it kind of bring him in was very cool. I'm surprised they didn't go a scarier route, because I guess the TV show, you know, tries to be scary. This one, the movie, not so much.
There's some episodes in the TV show that are legitimately like really trying to scare kids.
Oh yeah. Oh, and they legitimately, like, my son saw the dummy one and he hates it, but he liked the dummy in the movie. So it's interesting to see that they kind of straddled that line of family movie, but it felt like an Amblin movie. I mean, I think I've talked about this before, but it felt very, you know, early Spielberg. The kids are great. The actors, Jack Black's having fun. He's okay. It's fun, man. You know,
I still want to check it out. I was a big fan of the books.
I'm surprised you and Willow haven't watched it yet.
We're getting there. We've just been really busy.
Yeah.
So
you guys didn't go see it in the theater, huh?
Nope.
I was surprised. I thought that was something you guys would have been going to the theater for. But
we talked about it, but it was like one of those things that, like right now, I've been so busy, I haven't watched anything probably around that time it was released. But, you know, we're just the same route, because she's in a play.
Oh.
So she practices that. She's in Girl Scouts, you know, so it's getting busy time right now.
Yeah. I hear you. But the only other thing that I was able to, that I wanted to talk about, cause I really have nothing else to really talk about. I mean, I've got plenty of shit on my doorstep, haven't washed yet. So, I mean, there's going to be stuff to talk about in the future, people, for sure. But I wanted to talk about the X-Files, the new, the season 10, I guess. That's the 6-episode season. Have you watched it at all, or are you trying to catch up with old seasons?
I'm trying to catch up with old episodes.
Anyway, I'm having fun with it. I mean, people are kind of shitting on it left and right, of course, but here and there. But I mean, it feels like old X-Files, but that means both the good and the bad. I haven't watched the most recent one this week. I'm probably going to, shit, I don't know when. I'll have time to. I want to watch that. But the last one felt very much like a Goosebumps episode. It was, I thought it was going to be like a darker episode. Like all, my, most of my favorite ones of the old X-Files are Monsters of the Week and a bit darker kind of mystery, you know, monster mystery type things. And this one's, it felt like it was going to go that right, but I can't talk. I felt like it was going to go that route, but it took a turn for the comedic, which was really weird. And I guess there's been other X-Files episodes like that in the past seasons, but for this one, it just felt all of a sudden got too goofy. It's really weird. I'm on the fence with it. People either loved it or hated it. I kind of am a little bit of both, but anyway, it's just fun that it's back. And I'm having fun with it each week. But I think that's all I got, man. No one wants to hear me talk about Bridge of Spies or anything. My wife and I watched that.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. I got nothing.
Okay. All right. We're going to be talking to Mike McPadden in just a second. But first, we had last week I posted on Jogg, J-O-G-G, is this new app. It's kind of in beta. But it's a way for us to pose a question and have you guys pretty easily reply back, video. And I think it's a lot of fun. It hasn't really caught on yet. We had one reply this week.
And, that's like five down from last time.
Yeah, but it's a good one. It's a good one. And I'm going to play it right now. This is James Harris from Horror Sexy. And, he actually was in the hospital. Because he's going through chemo treatment.
Nah, it sucks.
Yeah, but he was kind enough to send this in. So here is James Harris. And but the question I asked was, what was the first heavy metal horror flick you remember seeing?
Hey, guys. It's James Harris from DocTerror and .com and Horror Sexy. I wanted to let you know about my first heavy metal horror experience. It really was actually not a movie. It was an Amazing Stories episode called Go to the Head of the Class. It featured Christopher Lloyd, Scott Coffey, and Mary Stuart Masterson, and the heavy metal element was they were backmasking a band called Blood Sausage's album, which had curses, and they were going to curse their teacher in the episode, and so they did the curse, and then they had to try to undo the curse because it had some repercussions they weren't aware of. So I thought that was kind of a unique one that maybe no one would remember. And it's still out of print on DVD. You can't get the second season on DVD. Sometimes it shows up on Netflix, though. So if you're lucky, Amazing Stories Season 2, go to the head of the class.
Bam. Hmm. James Harris amazing. Dropping some knowledge.
Man, that Amazing Stories, yeah. It was like on in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Season 1's been available for a while, but...
Yeah, it was like a... Wasn't that a Steven Spielberg thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even realize there's a season two. So, boom, there you go.
I like it.
Let's move in to our interview with Mike McBeardo McPadden about heavy metal movies.
Heavy metal horror.
All right, today's guest for week two of Heavy Metal Horror. We're excited to have Mike McPadden, a.k.a. Mike McBeardo McPadden, on the show. Author, of course, of Heavy Metal Movies. The book's out right now. You can get it through directly from Bazillion Points. I think you just go to heavymetalmovies.com, correct? Is that the easiest way?
Yeah, and if you get it from Bazillion Points, which is the heaviest publisher on earth, you'll get a free patch for your... Oh, you get a patch and a barf bag.
Oh,
Heavy Metal
Movies. Nice.
Well, I picked up an order from Amazon. God damn it. If I would have known.
Oops.
And well, I believe it's the same price at... Bazillion Points as it at heavymetalmovies.com as it is at Amazon.
Yeah, I saw that too late, and I apologize profusely. But the book is great. I've read the beginning. You're kind of forward to the book, the section with Alice Cooper. Then I've just been kind of thumbing through this because it's set up alphabetically, and the first thing that really kind of crossed my mind that I wanted to ask you was. How you went to approaching these movies. I know you have 666 movies. they're technically not all like heavy metal horror, but there is, you can make an argument for any of them that they did help or did contribute in some way to heavy metal. So how did you initially approach, you know, the selections for this book?
Okay, so the formula for this is, so they're actually, in the finished book, there are 850 reviews.
Okay.
And there were more than, there were almost 1,200 written, so a lot got cut out. So I need you screencaster listeners out there to buy as many as possible so we can have volume two. So the formula was that any movie that is about heavy metal music, so for instance, this is Spinal Tap, contains heavy metal music. So something like Judgment Night, that's a weird one to just pull out of the top of my head.
Dude, I went off on Judgment Night the other night. Okay. We talked about that on the last fucking show.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow, wow. So, and that, of course, has the heavy metal hip-hop mashup soundtrack. And then anything that conveys the spirit of heavy metal. So that would be Mad Max, Conan the Barbarian, the movie Heavy Metal, which actually doesn't have a lot of heavy metal in it. I mean, what metal is there is choice. Because I, you know, the Laser Dragon Invasion of the City scene set to Mob Rules by Sabbath is, that was my number two pick for the most metal scene of all time. Number one is Nigel Tufnel with showing his amps that go to 11. So, and that was really it. And then, and the other one was if bands have named themselves after a movie or sing songs about the movie, which, you know, Iron Maiden had like 50 songs that are inspired by movies.
Nice.
Like it. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I think that's a cool formula. I dig that because that was one thing that I, you know, I really enjoyed was, you know, kind of talking about like Witchfinder General, you know, those types of things that, that convey kind of the spirit of heavy metal, of even these bands being inspired, you know, like Black Sabbath, you know, Geezer Butler talking about certain films, through his career, what inspired, you know, him and just things that they like and that crosses over into the music. So I think it's quite the list they have put together. And it would be nice to see another 666 added to this shit. So
yeah.
So I would be totally down.
Nice for me too, because there's like, you know, 300 or so already written. So
yeah. So what?
Black Sabbath, which, you know, I subscribe to the theory that that band invented heavy metal, and they took their name from the movie Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
And the story that is often repeated is that they were a heavy blues band called Earth, and they were practicing one day in London and saw people lined up outside a movie theater showing the Boris Karloff, Mario Bava film Black Sabbath. And Geezer Butler said, wouldn't it be interesting to create music? Or he thought, isn't it funny that people line up to get scared? What if we created music that was scary like a horror movie? And voila, heavy metal.
Nice.
And heavy metal movies. And then the other thing is movies with heavy metal characters in them. So, for instance, Terror Vision, which otherwise is a very – you guys familiar with that?
Yes.
Oh, totally. That was actually okay. Our very first episode.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So you got that goofball character, the boyfriend in there. Otherwise, you know, I feel like that movie has a very new wave feel to it, but there's this, you know, complete headbanger in the midst of it. So that was another one. So Wayne's World and Bill and Ted, etc.
Nice.
Totally. Yeah, how this all started with, you know, actually, you know, it's kind of special between Sean and I, because Sean and I, we mentioned on the last show, we won't go too much into detail, but we kind of bonded over the heavy metal horror, because I was just taking an entire month and just watching every heavy metal horror film and, you know, was tweeting about it and everything like that. And then Sean contacted me about it, and, you know, he was watching some of the movies that I was talking about. And then, you know, a couple years later, we started this show. So what? It was always we've always talked about it quite a bit between us, because there was, you know, one of our favorite genres.
Yeah, it's the subgenre that I haven't fully explored, but it's like the subgenre that is the most up my alley, I think, because I was always a huge fan of of hair bands. I guess back in the, I think, fifth grade, I started listening to heavy metal the more and more. And then ever since then, it's just been the one style of music that I've always loved. You know, aside from punk and everything else, I always go back around to the hair bands. I mean, today I just discovered a band called, they're like a new band. It's ridiculous. Called Stryker. Have you heard of these guys?
I have, yeah.
Oh my God, they're amazing. Their album covers are awesome too. But you know, so that you know, that spirit, I think, of heavy metal is always, I've always loved, I think, more than punk rock, because I think there's a theatricality, I think, to heavy metal, and more of a sense of fun. They kind of have always blended angst and fun, I think, better than most music genres that I've gotten
into. And pain.
Power.
I always picked up on the power. Yeah, the movie Stryker, which I don't know if the band is named for them, is in the book. I just checked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
It's a post-apocalypse film, yeah.
Yeah, I think we talked about that not too long ago.
That was a good movie, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah, I dig that one. Well, one question I had for you, Mike, was with the beginnings of the book, did you just strictly have like true, pure heavy metal horror films? Or
no.
Were you always going to do something of that related to metal like you have done?
Yeah, no, I was always gonna do the spirit of metal more than anything. Because my favorite thing to write about and kind of just have fun with in my brain is to make odd connections appear natural. So it's like, how do you make, a really powerful, stark, British film from the 60s called The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner into a heavy metal movie? Well, it's because Iron Maiden has a very powerful and dramatic slow song about it. So, it was, you know, so that was always my feeling on that. And I had initially for a book, that was edited by my friend Eric Danville, written the 13. It was two lists. It was the heavy. His book was called The Official Heavy Metal Book of Lists. And I wrote the 13 greatest heavy metal horror movies and then the 13 greatest metal moments in non-metal movies. And so I just kind of slammed those two together, and inspired very directly by the incredible book Destroy All Movies, The Complete History of Punks in Film.
Yes.
By Zach Carlson and Brian Connolly, I pitched heavy metal movies to Ian Christie, and that's how it happened.
Awesome. Yeah, it's another good book. It's out of print, sadly, but, you know.
Yeah, it costs a lot.
Yeah, yeah, because if you can find it, yeah.
I lost mine at one point, and I've had to replace it, so.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was
a present. That's what I'll say. You know, it was a special occasion to get that thing.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yeah, that was on my list to get, that just Destroy All Movies. But, yeah, unfortunately went out of print before I would pull the trigger. Lesson learned. I was afraid that heavy metal movies would go out of print. So when we were talking about buying it, I was like, oh, shit, is that – because I got them confused. I was like, is that the one that's out of print?
Yeah, I should tell everybody. It's about to go out of print, so get online now.
Yeah, yeah.
When, in fact, Bazillion Points is heroic about keeping things in print. And we're actually in our second printing, so
– yeah.
That's awesome.
It's done nicely enough that I got to write another book for them that'll be out next year, or this year, actually.
Awesome. And that's your sex comedies.
Yes. Yes. Teen movies from the 70s and 80s. The title is not official yet, but the main title is, the subtitle is not. The working title is Going All the Way, The Ultimate Guide to Teen Movie Comedies of the VHS Era. And we will add words like nerds, jocks, punks, cheerleaders, pranks, tubular, rad, righteous. All that will get crammed into that title somewhere.
Very cool.
Nice. I like it. I like it.
There's something about the what's called like what we would call the VHS era with these types of movies, with the heavy metal horror, with the heavy metal movies, these teen sex comedies. I think that's lost on most modern, you know, films that come out that approach these subjects.
They don't even come close.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out why. Like, I don't think I've ever really come across on, you know, why that's the case. Is it just there was more unbridled enthusiasm less of a committee with film being made, or what do you think, Mike? What do you attribute to that?
You know, I've wondered about this because I always loved, you know, terrible movies mm-hmm. and B movies. And then, you know, in the 90s, they just got unwatchable. Like, they weren't fun. And I was starting to think, is this actually the result of home video or VHS? Because I remember, like, watching, like, I believe the movie, The Waterloo for me, was Roger Corman's Carnosaur. I was like, there's nothing fun. There's nothing adventurous about this. And I was thinking it could be because you can fast forward through this. And when they made movies to play in theaters, I really think they had some commitment, no matter how shoddy, they had some commitment to keeping people at least in the chair and engaged. Hmm. Whereas once the direct-to-video market really took over, the exploitation industry in the 90s, it was like, yeah, we can just put anything out there. And if people don't like it, they'll fast forward and they can just move on to the next thing. So that's kind of my way out theory on it.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, I mean, stuff doesn't get cooler the older it gets. That's for sure.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we touched on that subject before, is that, you know, when people were at the theater, they were invested. I worked at a video store in my younger years, and I felt that they were still invested because, you know, you'd get the family together, you would order pizza, you would go to the store, you would rent, you know, a movie or two. When you got home, whether the movie sucked or not, you still watched it because you just spent, you know, $30 on the night.
Yeah.
Now, however, Netflix has killed that because you can easily – no one's in it in 15 minutes. We can easily turn it off and go to something else.
I'm super guilty of that. Yeah. I mean 15 seconds for some of them, really.
Yeah, and you know, you have your phone in your hand. It's so easy to get distracted where you just don't care anymore. So it's – yeah, right. Movies aren't viewed the same way, you know, at all anymore.
And to music too, I think – because you now have an entire generation and a half that's never paid for it. So it's utterly worth to them. And that's, you know, it's to me, it's been the end of even like I've always loved as much as I love heavy metal and punk. I've always loved like bubblegum and top 40 music. But now it's akin to the blockbuster movies that I hate and I don't see, the superhero movies and all that crap, where it's just these computer calculated algorithms to like stir electric sensations within your brain waves. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is what you experience pop music and pop cinema. So like Batman versus Superman or whatever, to me is what I imagine my brain would experience when I was on Michael Palin's torture table in Brazil, like right before I passed out. I'd hear, you know, like Kanye West or something and see Civil Wars of Iron Man and Captain America, whatever the hell that crap is. And it's just everything is disposable. Everything is of the moment. So there is no investment. Literally, there's no investment of time even because, like you said, you can always just punch out and click something else.
Yeah, no, I have actually never translated that to music as well because that has happened, and I'm 100% guilty of that because I remember being younger and then waiting for one of my bands, you know, that I liked for their new album, and you wait and you wait and you wait, and you would buy it, and maybe it wasn't good, you would still listen to it because you just spent $19.99 on it. You would spend it a few times, and you would eventually get into it. Now you have Spotify, you bring up their new album, you listen to it once, and you're like, nah, I'm good. I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm on Spotify, you know, 22 hours a day I'm listening to it. I don't pay any attention to it. And as you said, when I would buy a record, I would try to memorize it because I had saved up and spent money, and this was now my connection to this artist, and if I thought they were cool, I wanted to connect with them. So I would get very, very into it. And I did. I felt that way about movies, too. And I don't feel that way anymore.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I remember, you know, going in my room, my big fucking Iowa stereo. You would put in your CD, and then you would lay like on, you maybe sit in your chair, lay on your bed. You look, flip through the package insert, read, you know, maybe follow along with the lyrics, maybe to, you know, really embrace it and learn everything. Look at the pictures, dude. This doesn't exist anymore.
No,
you know. But I guess that could be the same thing for movies. For most people, I would think. For the general public, I think it is. For people like us that really truly love things, I don't think it hasn't. It hasn't affected us, and it won't, because it's something we love.
Right.
It's more of a passion than just, you know, a disposable form of entertainment, just like how everybody else uses it. You know, I'm bored, I'm going to watch a movie. No, I'm like, I'm not bored, I want to watch a fucking movie.
That's really well put. And, you know, I was initially, for a long time, I should say, I always resented the coming of VHS because it took away the theatrical experience. I mean, I don't know how old you guys are. I'm 47. So I started going to theaters on 42nd Street in New York, where I'm from.
Damn.
When I was 14 in 1982. Awesome. I mean, it's awesome. It was also, like, completely insane. And I really thinking about it. Now, granted, I would go typically in the afternoon and stuff after school, because I grew up in Brooklyn. I went to school in Manhattan. And so I would go typically in the afternoon, or a big one for me was I would tell my parents I was going in for tutoring on a Saturday and go see movies on 42nd Street. So I really missed that.
Badass.
I missed the newspaper ads. I missed the posters. I missed all of that. And there was something – again, it was the devaluing of now I can hold this movie in my hand. It's no big deal. And there's a wall of 500 of them that I can pick from. And I got to tell you, man, when I'm writing these books, so Heavy Metal Movies, I worked on it every day for 3.5 years.
Wow.
And I can't imagine, and I genuflect to anybody who wrote any kind of research book before the internet. It's mind-boggling that they got done.
Yeah.
And my great hero is a writer named Danny Peary, who three-volume series called Cult Movies, as well as something called The Guide for the Film Fanatic. And in those books, he writes about, like, flying to California to see things at UCLA. He went to Georgia to see Blood Feast. Because, like, that was what you had to do. There was no videotape. The first one came out in 82. And that was just around the time. That was, like, Christmas 82 was when everybody got a VCR. So that book came out earlier in that year. And, heroic, superhuman to pull that off.
You know, fun fact with we had – I mean, he's still part of the Screencast family, but Brian Sauer – who's Bob Freelander on Twitter. He was one of our old co-hosts. But we still, you know, still family. He's actually making a doc on Danny.
Oh, yes. Right now. Yeah. Been in touch with him. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. And I mean,
Heavy Metal Movies to Danny Peary.
What?
I dedicated my book, Heavy Metal Movies, to Danny.
Yeah. Peary. Yeah. Yeah. It's really awesome because his books really turned me on to things. Cause I picked up the first one, maybe when I was in my, early 20s, I discovered it. It was kind of led from, you know, I always mentioned I had an all movie guide for my, you know, like Windows 95 computer in 1995. Sure. And it mentioned his name a few times in some of the kind of the mini reviews. And that led to me purchasing the volume one of that book. And it really got me going, and especially with your book, too. There's movies in there that, you know, I've experienced for the first time. Because of it, I think it's a very special thing when you have somebody go out of their way to do research on something like that. Because I mean, the industry was so saturated, in the 70s and 80s, especially the 80s with all these films, because, you know, they were selling movies left and right, making movies left and right based on posters, just based on a word, you know, and it was made. And a lot of these movies have disappeared and are lost. So, yeah. It's nice to have those people that really, you know, pioneer something and really push for these films to have kind of resurgence. And that's why I'm really excited with your next book, because man, there's a shit ton of films in the sex comedy world that are fucking gone.
Yeah.
You know, oh, that yeah. you will, that is near impossible to find. And if they're near impossible to find, the general public doesn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
fireballs. Like fucking fireballs. No one knows fireballs.
Fireballs. Yeah, all the balls movies are in the book.
Good. Yeah.
Meatballs, oddballs, fireballs, goofballs.
My favorite is Give Me an F, though.
Really?
So, yeah.
I'll say this, the greatest teen sex title of all time.
Yeah, but the Tommy Hamilton shower scene dance is fucking incredible.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Pretty magnificent.
But this is heavy metal horror, people, so
we'll
save that conversation next time when Mike's on this year, eventually, hopefully. So you got anything, Sean? You got a boner talking about sex comedy?
Oh, man. Don't get me started. That's another subgenre that is right up my alley that is vastly underexplored by my eyes.
One question I have for you, Mike, because I imagine it's actually two questions. What's your generic questions? Actually, what's your favorite pure, like with the music, with the plot? Your favorite heavy metal horror film, and what's your favorite film that you wrote about in your book? Just curious.
Okay, my favorite film in the book is here's the thing. Really pushed me on who I think the two best rock bands are. It's the Beatles and the Stones. So my favorite film in the book is This Is Spinal Tap. It's my favorite comedy. I love the music. I think it's completely kick-ass metal on top of being hilarious. Mm-hmm. And, it's a perfect product to me. It's a perfectly realized vision. My favorite heavy metal horror movie is The Gate from 1987.
Nice.
Which is, about a couple of kids that play a metal record backwards and unleash a gate to hell in their backyard, through which come these little homunculi, which are just what amazing visual effects that movie has. Just using forced perspective, these little claymen that run around, and you look at that versus CGI, and we've gone so far backwards, like that movie stopped. Like that's how far backwards. I think that's a great movie. I think it's perfect for kids who want to get into horror, who want to get into metal.
It's one of the very first movies I showed to my kid.
It's funny. So that's my favorite heavy metal horror movie.
Nice. I was just curious because it's definitely jumbles around with a lot of people based on because a lot of people just love the soundtracks. Right. Some people just love the plot. Because there is that heavy metal kind of like almost subplot in The Gate that there's one thing they didn't really go too much on, but it's there and it makes you. It makes you think about spinning records backwards and stuff like that. Takes that history, which is really cool. But I agree with you. One thing about the claymation that I always, because Sean and I are, we go back and forth on CGI. Sometimes it looks really good. Most of the time it looks like garbage. But there's something about claymation that the movement is creepy. Mm-hmm. Whether it looks good or not, looks cheap, it's how it moves. That's why, late at night when I was a kid, I couldn't watch any Tool videos because they would scare me.
It's scary now.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and that's a legit thing. Like I would just turn it off because it was really creepy to me. I felt like I was watching something I wasn't supposed to. And that's one thing about claymation that I miss because it does give this creepiness effect. If you would replace The Gate with CGI, it probably wouldn't be as creepy with those things.
No, it absolutely
would look too cartoonish.
You definitely wouldn't remember it. Because to me, the thing with CGI, again, it's just like vapors. There's nothing there. I'm looking at nothing.
Yeah.
There's no weight. There's nothing organic. And that's the thing with the clay and stop motion animation. There's an organic quality to it. It's there. You can, there's the sense that you can feel it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, people aren't looking at the ground with a square there saying, hey, there's the monster beast.
And it's just, it's just fumes. There's nothing.
Yeah, Clash of the Titans, the original 1981, that Medusa scene, I think is probably one of my top kind of scenes in any film I've seen, film. In any special, it's my top kind of special effect, even like scary scene You know, because that movie, that Medusa character gave me nightmares, and that scene was super tense. And I even showed it to my kids, and it got them, like, they were totally totally into that scene and scared the shit out of my son. But yeah, I mean, you watch that compared to, you know, the remake, or even like the original compared to the remake. It's like there's something about the tangibleness of these effects, even if they look a bit goofy. There's something about it that holds up more than these modern reimaginings of these films. Yeah, I think movies are getting better with the blending of these effects, but we just watched The Last Witch Hunter, my wife and I, and some of those scenes are just,
oh dude,
the CG is you're right, it's vapor. Like there's a certain CG is
really bad in that movie.
Well,
sometimes.
It's supposed to be these vines or something coming out to hold them down to the ground, and it's, you can tell it's nothing. There's nothing there. You know, it's nothing. Not scary at all.
Yeah.
There are scenes from in Last Witch Hunter that would be considered heavy metal.
Oh, absolutely. And there are a lot of CGI movies in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, anything with a witch hunter in the name is so.
Of course.
There's some Nicolas Cage movie. I can't think where he was a witch hunter.
Oh, it's a Season of the Witch?
Season of the Witch. Yeah, that's in the book. Yeah. That's right.
Is there some movies that you're surprised that you were like, man, I can't believe I'm putting this film in the book, because maybe you're not a fan of it, or, you know, it met criteria, but you weren't a fan of it, or?
No, I'm not a fan of a lot of the movies in the book, but I didn't really, very few films in there that I bombed or wrote anything really bad about, because, you know, that's a bummer for the reader. There's a writer named Darius James, from New York, who had a moment in the 90s. He's an African-American guy who wrote a book called Negrophobia that was pretty good. And then that was like a satirical screenplay that he published as a book. He then wrote – he got to write the book about blaxploitation movies. And it's called That's Blaxploitation. And his whole thing is about how much he hates the movie Shaft.
Oh.
And it's like, well, fuck you. Don't write this book.
Because there's definitely people that like Shaft.
Well, I mean, because, it's – okay, I fucking hate Star Wars, right? I hate it. I hate every fucking aspect of it because I'm not seven. When I was seven, it was fucking religion to me.
We're not going to argue, Mike. It's okay.
So, to me, that was the end of fucking cinema. It's over. It had like about 10 years of death knells that were pretty good. But so I hate the fucking thing. But I was like, I can't write fuck Star Wars. Because that will offend everyone but me.
That's
and
amazing.
So I had to take a clever approach to it, or an attempted clever approach.
Uh-huh.
So I just went through, and it turned out to be like because the world is full of shitheads, turned out to be the most quoted review in the book. Where I was just like, you know, here's how Star Wars is metal. I was like, R2-D2 is Nintendo Core. Chewbacca is stoner rock. So I went through, I was like, you know, Grand Moff Tarkin is National Socialist black metal. I went through all the heavy metal subgenres and ascribe them to characters in Star Wars. But, you know, and as a result, it's a much better, funnier, more meaningful review than if I had just, you know, teed off on Star Wars, which also really annoys me when critics shit on movies. It's like,
yeah,
go fuck yourself. You know, like, you made something and you watched. But there are movies I didn't lie. I really disliked the movie Hesher. With Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I kind of made that clear. I may as well just say it at this point. I can't stomach the fucking Rob Zombie movies, like, at all. Mm. But I really, really hated Lords of Salem. So I just kind of gave it to Derek, here's what these movies are. And everybody loves them, and they rock. And then Lords of Salem, I was like, okay, I got to say this, you know, everything I really think about this. And unfortunately, that did cost me a Rob Zombie cover.
Oh,
So,
hey, you got to be true.
I would have taken a different approach. Not dishonest, but
yeah. But at least you're honest, though. I mean, I think I always approach things, you know. If it's coming from an honest point of view, I can totally get it. If it's coming from just, oh, I want to shit on something because I hated it and I want to just keep the perpetual shitting moving along.
Right.
And that's kind of where I draw the line. That's where, you know, that's where Twitter kind of gets exhausting, you know, social media especially gets exhausting, especially lately. But I guess that's a tough thing when you know you're writing a book, because Twitter comes, like social media, these tweets come and go, whatever, you know, but a book, you know, it's in there. You know, it's in there for good.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I guess you need to kind of straddle the line a little more, I believe.
Well, I have another question for Mike, and this is based on our last episode. And this is going to be a really funny question off the wall for you, Mike. All right. However, we had kind of a questionnaire of, like, ask people what their favorite heavy metal horror film was. Well, was that the question, Sean? Or what was the jogger question?
That's the question for this
one. What was your very first heavy metal horror film?
Yep.
And someone replied with Jeepers Creepers. How do you feel about that?
As a heavy metal horror film?
Yeah.
You know, it's not that wouldn't have made the top 666. But it's not completely off the wall.
And why is that?
Because it, you know, the whole creeper element, that monster is a very metal creature.
Yeah.
And him working in his fucking tool shed, which I thought was super cool, that he had some weird little room that he was like this, what the hell was he, like an insect Batman or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had like a little wood shop that he would, like, I don't know what that, like work with human skin or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a very metal creature. And again, in the spirit of heavy metal. So I don't think it's completely awful.
There you go. Hey, it made me laugh.
Wow. Okay.
There you go. So now we got to take back, because Mike's the professional.
I know.
So you just made us eat our words.
Yeah.
No. I just said that.
Basically, Brad and I are assholes. what do you think of the, because what's funny with heavy metal, I think more than most, I guess there's kind of the stoner stereotypes, but there is that metalhead kind of stereotype.
Right.
That some people had some issues with Deathgasm. I know that because they said it perpetuated some of these stereotypes. I'm a huge fan of Deathgasm. I don't think they did at all.
Fuck stereotypes.
Like I said, this was social media, so someone's probably just trolling. But do you see some of these stereotypes in these movies, or do you think that this kind of calling things out a stereotype is bullshit?
Yeah, I'm not gonna buy. Yeah, if someone does that, I'm not interested in that. I no longer recognize them as human. I stereotype them as shit that I should step away from. Yeah, I thought Deathgasm. Now, I'm not in general not a fan of horror comedies, but I thought Deathgasm was really good. I thought it was really funny and really well done. And I thought it got the metal aspects of everything, satisfyingly. I don't know if accurate, but true in a grander sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking exhausting. I mean, to be pissed off about this stuff at this point is just, I can't do it anymore.
Well, people but like it.
Everybody wants to define themselves by what they're offended by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
that's exhausting, I think, in itself.
Yeah, no, it's a mental prison. But so if some, I mean, what a dildo would have to say. Dude, stereotypes my culture. What was like that Halloween campaign? Like, don't dress up as the fucking, you know, Speedy Gonzalez. It's a culture, not a costume. So there's like some dickhead with like a battle vest on and all greasy hair and combat boots going, it's a culture, not a costume.
Oh, man. I guess the answer is that.
No, I think we could go on Deathgasm for a second. I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but I think that was one – that was a film that made me feel like I was young again, because I grew up watching these, you know, wacky, you know, Evil Dead 2, a lot of illustrations in movies, and it just blended everything, the gore, the comedy, the goofiness – the music, it just put everything in one, And I think that's the reason why I like Deathgasm, was because I felt like a kid again. And I think when movies do that, because, you know, I'm only 30. How old am I? 31? 31. I'm 31 years old. So, you know, I caught a lot of these at the video store in right. the horror section. I didn't see them at theaters. So I would go on the weekends and I would rent 3 or 4 movies and then sit in my room and watch them. And, you know, my mom would buy box lots of VHS tapes on eBay for me, and, you know, mainly horror box lots. And I would just siphon through those and go through them as much as possible. And I remember just sitting there laughing and felt like I was, you know, doing something wrong when titties would come up on the screen. So, you know, watching Deathgasm, I was like, man, this is a movie that I would be watching in my room when I was like 12 years old, and then kept pausing and rewinding when, you know, titties or, you know, something, you know, gruesome or gory would come up. I would just keep rewinding it. I'd probably watch the dildo fight maybe 100 times.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things that it does achieve all those aspects, for me at least, of being young and watching those films. Is there anything that you have seen of recent that made you feel like you're on 42nd Street again or anything like
that? No, like of recent vintage? No. Not at all. And there's nothing worse than when they, like, the neo grindhouse stuff that tries to recreate it is just, I mean, okay, I hate Trauma way more than I hate Star Wars. And
you're in good company.
I feel like shit like, you know, like Hobo with a Shotgun, or, you know, Die Bitch Die, or any of that stuff. They're just like, you know, fancy Trauma movies. Just, you know, sarcastic and self-aware and just not, you know, just completely worthless to me. Worse than worthless. Despicable. Hmm. So, no, No. I mean, yeah, I'm a grouchy old man. I don't.
No. So nothing. No.
Like in terms of exploitation and stuff. No.
Like any film in general that you've really enjoyed over the past, you know, few years. Not necessarily has to be horror, but
I really
made you feel like you were young again or anything like that.
Man, I think the movie. I think my favorite movie this century was Spring Breakers. I really loved Spring Breakers.
Yeah.
Because it seemed genuinely possessed of madness.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really funny and sick. So, yeah, in that way, it did. Okay, so, yeah, I'll say Spring Breakers.
Okay.
Because it did seem, as I said, it seemed possessed of its own madness. And
that's why I liked it. I went in that movie not thinking I was going to like it at all, but it was just so fucking insane that's what drew me to it.
And genuinely, I mean, and it really, it felt like genuine insanity and like they got away with something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and super entertaining and really like sick and just probably bad for humanity. So
yeah,
I appreciated that. I loved those French horror movies from about 10 years ago, like Martyrs and Inside. I thought they were great.
Yeah.
Inside is actually the closest. Are you familiar with that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very much.
That's the closest the movie's ever come to make me throw up. Mm. There was hot puke at the top of my throat. Nice. I was, like, ready to blow.
I watched that as my wife was pregnant with our third.
You didn't make her watch it, did you?
Oh, hell no. Are you kidding me? No.
So early labor induction.
No, that's the thing. Like, I thought there was going to be more coming from that kind of French New Wave as well, but it seems like
it died down real quick.
It did. Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of in keeping with the classic horror cycle. So it's like, you know, they only last a few years in retrospect. Because I think of, like, you know, the good slasher movies in the early 80s and then, like, the good kind of, you know, funny splatter movies like Reanimator and Return of the Living Dead. And, like, they're all from, like, right, like, the same 2 or 3 years. So I think that's France had their little moment like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I was just hoping that would continue.
Yeah. I just think it's too cheap to make movies and there's too many outlets and we're just flooded with everything. Oh, you know what I did like a lot was A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Yeah, that's really good.
So So yeah, I'll say that. But that's like, you know, that wouldn't have been like a 42nd Street movie, but that would have been like something I would have seen at the Waverly or the A Street Playhouse at midnight back in the 80s.
No, it's a great film. It's also fucking great killer soundtrack too.
Yes. Yeah, really good movie.
Yeah.
That's been my favorite horror movie of the most recent vintage.
Okay.
I wanted to kind of go back to the 42nd Street. I've obviously never been, but you hear a lot about 42nd Street. In fact, isn't there a documentary, a recent documentary about 42nd Street?
Well, you know, there's like been a bunch being made forever.
42nd Street Memories was on the UK release of Anthropophagus, the Beast.
The Grim Reaper. Yeah. What is that documentary? I have to find that.
I don't know. I think it got some shit because they used somebody's poster screenshot from a website, and that website.
Oh, that was that Calum.
Yeah.
Right. Something happened. Yeah, something happened. I forget what that was.
Yeah, someone forgot to get a. He forgot to attribute somebody off a screenshot. Who gives a shit? But I haven't watched it yet. I hear it's a really good documentary. But I mean, what drew you to 42nd Street? Was it just because it was nearby and that was kind of your outlet to go watch films, or was there just something?
It's fucking naked women, dude. I mean, Jesus Christ! It was a goddamn jungle. That city was fucking insane. It was completely lawless. And, I mean, 42nd Street was like an open whorehouse that showed horror movies. So, yeah, I from age 7, which is probably the first time I was aware of it when I went to see like a Broadway show or something, till I was 14 and then on my own in Manhattan, I was like the first place I went. So what 42nd Street was, it was about a dozen grindhouse theaters that showed double and triple features for, it was $1.50 forever. And then, like, I think at the end, like in 93 or so, it had gone up to maybe $5. And they just, any exploitation movie played there. Everything played there. They'd be mixed in with Hollywood movies too sometimes. But the bottom of the bill was always like, you'd see crazy, you know, Jess Franco movies and shit like that, paired with like a Police Academy movie, which was nuts. and then in between those theaters was nothing but like sex shows and peep shows with live girls and porno theaters and porno stores. And then, you know, for your convenience, professional sex providers just kind of walking around openly plying their trade everywhere. And it actually took me, I didn't have the nerve to go into a peep show until I was 19. And then I went with a girl. I couldn't go by myself. And then that was it. I mean, that destroyed my life after that. But throughout high school, I would go see the double and triple features at the Grindhouse theaters. And they were really just kind of public access insane asylums. They were just for people that were berserk, had to get off the street. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw a lot of fights, a lot of shit getting thrown. It got, you know, the crack smoking made it scary at one point, the deeper you got into the 80s. And then, you know, I myself had a little problem with chemicals for a while. So I would go see these movies completely bombed out of my mind. And then this is so years later in 94, The theaters had all closed. The old grindhouses, which were all old movie palaces that had fallen into shit, they were all closed, and there was just one multiplex at the end of 42nd Street. They had converted, I think it was the Anko Theater, into this multiplex. And in 94, I went to go see Wes Craven's New Nightmare there at 3 a.m. I wanted to go to the 3 a.m. show. Wow. But I was sober. I was completely sober. So I walk in, and I sit down. And, you know, the rest of the audience filed in. I was like, what the fuck was I ever doing here? I must have been out of my goddamn mind. And I actually left before the movie started.
Oh, man.
So youth and complete inebriation made that possible for me.
Right. You know, one part of the book that I really loved was how you had gave Alice, you know, Alice Cooper has a little section in here.
Yeah.
Where he talks about his movies. Have you tried to do anything else like that with any other, you know, filmmakers or anyone else like Alice Cooper, or was that
contact a lot of people? Or
No. I didn't really want to do interviews. I mean, I just wanted to do maybe one, and the idea was I was hoping to get Alice or somebody, even Rob Zombie, perhaps. But I fucked that up. But I mean, I'm a huge Alice. I have Alice Cooper's eyes tattooed on the backs of my hands. So, yeah, I wanted to get somebody to write the intro.
Okay.
And when that wasn't possible, he did agree to do an interview. And my friend Catherine Terman, who I go way back with, I worked at Hustler in the 90s. And Flint, at that point, owned a bunch of magazines. She worked at the heavy metal magazine, Ripped. Mm. So that's how we got to know each other. We both worked at the Larry Flint Publications building. She produces Nights with Alice Cooper, his radio show. So she set that up, and she's just the best, and he was awesome. He could not have been friendlier, more forthcoming. And he even called back to give me some extra stuff that he had forgotten to include.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, I love that little section. Kind of being one of the first things you read, it really kind of sets up, you know, the book nicely.
Well, thank you.
So, yeah, this is a really fantastic book. This is something I like that it's set up alphabetically, that you can kind of thumb through and, you know, go through the B's or the J's or whatever, whenever you have a second when you're sitting down. And I definitely do want to use this to discover some movies for sure. And I'm sure many people who bought this have done the same thing. Brad, did you find movies in here that you wanted to track down, or?
Yeah. Well, it was funny because, you know, when I actually did that thing and, you know, when we started conversing back and forth, when I was watching the heavy metal horror films, my buddy was like, "Hey man, you should totally write, you know, a book on what you've seen. I think it would be really cool." And I was like, "Yeah, cool." And then my buddy Josh Johnson was like, "That's already kind of being done, bro. So don't do it." And I was like, okay, cool." So when the book came out, I immediately picked it up because I'm going to see what this fucking guy did, you know? And I ended up really liking it. You know, I was like, "Shit." I was like, "This guy's got his shit down." I'm trying to think of something in there that like really hit hard. But I'm just drawing a blank right now. But I mean, there's things that I heard of that, you know, the book made me track down. Mm-hmm. You know, especially a lot of the older films, because like Witchfinder General, that's in the book, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Witchfinder General. I tracked that down because I was like, all right, I'm gonna give that a shot, and I enjoyed that. And that's recently just, you know, came out again on Blu-ray from like Arrow or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It was a lot of things that encouraged me to watch them, even though I knew about them. I'm trying to think of anything I just was completely blind in. I think it's all around gets people really into those films. Exploitation films, heavy metal. I think it's all those films fall into a very particular special genre. I mean, even stuff like Terrorvision is a very special movie. Maybe the movies all are related to one another, but they all have this surrounding kind of universe that's very special. It was a universe that I felt I always belonged in, and always made me feel good. So it's nice to see kind of this collage of films that I grew up with, and even stuff that I could still continue to watch today. But yeah, I truly, truly love that book.
So. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, I love that it's genre crossing. That was the one thing, the first thing I picked up on, and it, there definitely is, you know, good or bad. If the film's good or bad, there's something to be discovered. And yeah, it's a fantastic book. So, all right, we can go on and on, you know, praising the book, I'm sure.
Well, thank you.
But pick it up if you don't have it, people.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I'm can't believe it took me so long to pick this up.
It's no matter how much of a fucking movie nerd you are, and how pretentious you think it is, like, oh, no one's gonna tell me anything new. No, you're wrong, because I learn new shit all the time, and this book turned me on to some new shit. So definitely pick it up.
Yep.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah. No, I learned a ton. I'm guilty of thinking I know everything, and I learned so much while I was doing this book. So.
Like any big discoveries that you were researching and then you seeked out the film and then you were like, holy shit, this is fucking amazing.
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, I'm not going to harp on the gate again, but that was definitely one that I had only seen, casually on cable when I was a kid. I was in college. Because it was rated PG or PG-13, I was like, ah, fuck that. So that was a really pleasant discovery. There's a bunch, and I'd have to think about it a little. So I guess I'll push for the gate again. Everybody should see that movie.
I think one that I when I was doing kind of the heavy metal horror, one that I was really attracted to was and it's for some reason it's really hated, but Terror on Tour.
Terror was awesome, man. And if you want to ask me my first heavy metal movie, that was it.
Yeah. I understand it's a little slower than what people are probably used to, the speed metal and fucking demons coming out everywhere. But I don't know. I just really like, the band The Clowns or the ones that are around. The music might not be great, but it has this really eerie setting to the film. I always liked since I saw it, because that was new to me when I was doing this a few years back.
Yeah, it's that is a big discovery. Except I had actually, that was one of the early movies that I rented on VHS, and even then, I mean, it's so off the wall, and the clowns are so weird. To just kind of let people know, they're sort of a Kiss ripoff, but they wear afros. And it's a murder mystery, like somebody's murdering their groupies. But I like the music in it.
Yeah,
and then my first heavy metal horror movie is Kiss Meets the Phantom, which I saw in 1978, and it blew my mind. I mean, I knew it was terrible. I was 10, but I still loved it because it was Kiss on TV. So,
yeah, that was one that I could not get into.
Yeah, it's not good, but it's great.
Yeah.
Awesome, Mike. Well, so you're currently working on this Brad keeps saying sex comedies, but it's more than that.
Teen comedies. Teen sex comedies coming of age.
Sorry, Sean. Jesus.
when are you when's the kind of the deadline for that to be out? Is there a deadline that you're rushing towards, or is it a couple years away?
No. The deadline, because I've been working on this for the past year and a half.
Okay.
The deadline, I mean, we're going to be working on it over the summer. Hopefully it'll be out in the fall. If we don't get it out in the fall, it'll be out early next year. So.
Okay.
And, Going All the Way is the title of that one.
Nice.
Anything you'd like to add, Mike, to Heavy Metal?
HeavyMetalMovies.com. BazillionPoints.com.
All right, Mike. Well, thank you. So I'm about to choke. Hold on.
You getting choked up? You don't want him to go?
Choked up, Mike. Don't want to leave.
I'll be right.
No, you want to. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us, of course. And everybody, grab Heavy Metal Movies, and definitely grab his next book, because if this is any indication, the next one is going to be pretty fun to go through as well.
Boner checks.
Boner checks for everyone.
Boobies
for days. Now it's time to jump into our segments here. We're going to skip one of them because the planned movie may be moving on to some bigger, better things here in a couple weeks. Stay tuned.
We'll still talk about it eventually.
Stay tuned for that. Brad, you wanted to talk before we jump into VHS. Oh, my God.
We'll just say that.
My brain. You guys don't even understand.
VHS, oh my God, has been replaced from This Has Been Out for a While.
Two different companies released this. One was a better transfer than the other segment.
Well, plus it was on Anchor Bay on DVD for a while.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we're going to talk about demons. I think Demons is like pure heavy metal horror, but always kind of gets the shaft because you don't ever see it on a list or discussed too much. And that whole movie is super metal, and it's you know, every list that I've seen, is it in McBeardo's book?
I'm looking right now. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So at least
I mean, thank God I made it there.
Yeah. At least he knows what he's doing. But yeah, I was looking at these, you know, cause during the show I was looking at, you know, just kind of people's lists and, you know, just want to make sure I didn't forget anything. If anything is considered, you know, like McBeardo has a couple, you know, films in there that you're like, oh shit, you know, that is totally metal. But it was just one of the films that was always really, really stood out. Now, I know that you have, you know, this, like Rick Springfield on that that soundtrack and like Motley Crue, but dude, with the Fastest Shark by Accept, you know, Saxon, Everybody Up, you know, the Pretty Maids Night Danger song. I mean, there's a guy that is on a bike, on a motorcycle with a sword. In a movie theater, riding along the seats, chopping off the heads of demons.
Yes.
Instruments of evil. Like, dude, there's green sludge going into people's mouths. There's people's eyes being gouged out. There's fingernails, you know, coming out of people, you know, these fucking big claws. I mean, it is a super gross movie. It is super bad. There's a fucking helicopter that falls through the top ceiling of the movie theater and crashes. And blades chop people up. I don't know how much more metal you can get than that.
Plus the poster man with the you know, the shadowy demon fingers with the glowing eyes. I mean, that's
true. Yeah, and when that scene happens, you know, I know that we're in Blu-ray age now, so you can see like everybody's wearing sunglasses and their demon might light in their face. But still, I mean, that's like an epic scene. I remember watching Demons for the first time and felt like, oh, man, this movie was made for me because this is the movie that I wanted to make. You know, it's just I love when people are trapped and they have to, like, you know, build up a camaraderie to, like, you know, overcome whatever obstacle they're doing. And, you know, just how that happens, how everybody bands together, how they fight. You know, running around from room to room with metal playing, like, it's, you know, that is, like, if we're going to consider stuff, you know, because I consider The Gate heavy metal horror, I'm not dissing that, but if we consider The Gate heavy metal horror, we have to consider Demons. You know, I mean, of course, they're not listening to this music, but it just has this really powerhouse soundtrack.
Well, just like, you know, Maximum Overdrive, it's like, you know, there's heavy metal kind of driving the film.
Yeah,
know, whether
yeah,
or not
yeah.
it's on screen.
But it's the same thing. Fucking, yeah. you know, trucks that are, you know, electrical appliances that are being taken over by a comet that's a UFO is possessing electrical appliances and cars.
Yeah.
Dude, that's nuts.
Are there any, like, heavy metal kind of characters that you would see in Demons that you'd be like, oh, yeah, that person, that guy or gal, like, they totally listen to metal.
Well, I think it's not. I think it's. Is it Tommy? It's the group that comes along later.
Yeah,
that's doing like doing the coke out of the coke can, like those three guys and girl.
Right.
Like they're kind of punkish, but it's also, you know, I think those people are total metalheads, and just. You have, I can't remember his name. Is it Tony?
I think
the big
so.
Black guy, the big black guy in the film. But no, yeah, his name's Tony in the movie. His name is Bobby Rhodes in real life.
Right.
Like, fucking, like, what's metal about that is you have this blaxploitation character in a fucking zombie demon movie who is just kicking everybody's ass. You know, and to me, that's metal. You're like, hey, we're going to put in this Fred Williamson character into this movie. And that's what it is. It feels like Fred Williamson. It feels like, you know, the same thing in From Dusk Till Dawn with Fred Williamson and that. You know, you're just throwing this guy who's been through the shit, and you know, and he's so badass they even put him in the sequel. And he still does. He's the same character basically, and still kicks ass. He just has an army of muscle heads behind him in the second one. So I don't know. It's one of those things that I've always kind of looked up to, and you don't see on a lot of lists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it deserves to be right there. It's more metal than most of those films on heavy metal horror list.
Well, you know, that's the thing though. Like I figured I was gonna. In the movies we watched so far, you know, in kind of preparing for heavy metal horror and stuff like that, I mean, there hasn't been a lot of demons, you know. I mean, is there demons, or is that Black Roses? I always get Black Roses and Trick or Treat kind of mashed together in my brain.
No, well, I mean, Trick or Treat does have some demon looking character.
Okay,
like,
right.
That pops up, but Black Roses is
that's
pure,
about the, like, the demon band, right?
Demons on stage.
Yeah. Yeah, I was expecting I would see more of that in some of these movies, but you know, a lot of them are just straight up kind of more of a slasher, you know, type thing. You know, I haven't gotten to the right movies yet, but you think about heavy metal and things like that. I mean.
Yeah.
You know, Deathgasm had it was like demon zombies. So
right.
So there you go. So Black Roses.
I think that the whole thing is, you know, that music, playing music backwards, devil crossover.
Yeah.
The satanic panic, because that's kind of where these films stem from. And you know, you have, you know, these demons are spawning because of this mask. Of this devil, you know, this devil face that these people are putting on, they're getting scratched and then turning into these, you know, relentless beings. So that's so fucking metal, 100%.
By the way, I got to plug the book Satanic Panic, Pop Cultural Paranoia in the 1980s, edited by Kier La Jeunesse and Paul Karup.
Yeah, so like...
By the way, pick it up.
Yeah, it's a good book. It's fun with those books because you really get, I don't know, I think a lot of us forgot about it or were too young and mm-hmm. we don't remember. So I like that book because it really focuses on certain things like movies and music, to what kind of made this radical, you know, approach from adults and mm-hmm. like government.
Yeah,
saying that this is, you know, this is happening. I mean, we had Twisted Sister who had parental, you know, this is not really satanic, but you had Twisted Sister who is getting a parental advisory on their record and they didn't cuss.
Yeah.
It was just about content, you know. So, I mean, but that's also coming right after the Satanic Panic, where if you played a record backwards or you listened to it, you would do what it says. Like you would listen to the Ozzy Osbourne album, you know, and. You know, there's nothing left, so kill yourself now. Like, oh, kids are going to kill themselves now. It's like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, I remember that, man, because I mean, I think I was young at that age. My parents were kind of going through that with the churches they were involved in and things like that, because we were started hearing about it when I was still in Northern California. And, you know, my parents had stories about people who were demon-possessed, and then, of course, my mom, when she became a Christian, she smashed all of her Black Sabbath records and Alice Cooper records and all this stuff. And I'm in my mind now, I'm like, do you know how much money you smashed? But they went through that and they blamed, you know, music for these dark forces. And I kind of grew up with that kind of heavy metal and, you know, rock and roll always were side by side with the devil. And I remember even when I was going into junior high, my dad wanted to teach Sunday school class and play this Christian documentary called Hell's Bells. And I remember taping off I dubbed the tape just so I can listen to those bands. Cause there's like the only way, the only context I can listen to heavy metal without my parents freaking out. Cause I was like, well, I'm watching this documentary about the evils of heavy metal.
Nice.
So like I had this weird, my weird path into heavy metal, you know, was this thing that I wasn't allowed to listen to and that I was told would, you know, create evil. And, but the people that I knew,
an instrument of evil,
an instrument of evil. But it's like the people that I knew that were, troublemakers that listened to metal. It's like, they would have been troublemakers listening to Justin Bieber. Like they were just jackass kids, you know? And it happened to like the, you know, maybe the music helped them maybe come out of their shell a little bit, but you know, you can't just lump everyone in, you know, and stereotype everyone based on the music they listen to and the attitude they have. It's like, it's almost like that attitude grew out of all these groups and Christian groups, trying to, you know, like pick at their shows and cause a stir. It was like no press is bad press. No publicity is bad publicity. It was all good. And that's what spurred it on. We don't really have anything like that as far as the whole kind of, you know, culture or society kind of getting worked up over one thing like that, no, do we? I mean, it's been a while.
It's random sometimes, but like it's getting to the point where just no one cares because there's just so much shit out there right now that we don't occupy. Like there's a small group that still is against the music, you know, but you also have, you know, these, now it's kind of embraced and you find out about, people find out about it and they're like, oh, it's kind of okay. You know, I don't mind worshiping Satan.
I think people realize a lot of that stuff, you know, what fed all that was, you know, was this
talking
attention
about it. Yeah, you give things attention, they get more popular. That's why, you know, you got to have a point where you stop, you know, acknowledging, you know, Westboro Baptists, and they just kind of disappear. You know, the more you publicize them and show them where they are, the more they'll be around because that's the publicity that they get.
Yeah.
That's how they get money. That's how they get members.
I loved what Mike said about how Black Sabbath formed.
Yeah.
Where they looked outside what movie did he say was playing?
Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath. Duh. Yeah. Stupid. And them saying like we want to, how about we make music that scares people? You know, I've been thinking about that since we talked to him like quite a bit because, that's interesting that hadn't happened before as far as bands embracing the horror element. And it makes so much sense now looking back on it and listening to Black Sabbath's lyrics and Ozzy Osbourne's lyrics. It's like, yeah, of course they're basically creating their own horror movies through their lyrics. They're not serious. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I think the more people got wind of that after the Satanic Panic, I think now people see things a little bit differently. Music's theatrical.
It became doom metal rather than satanic metal. Like it became, you know, dark and gloomy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the reason why doom metal is my favorite is because it's super dark, but it's also to the point where it's relaxing.
Yeah.
You know, you can listen, you could be angry and, you know, put on a metal record, it be, you know, doom metal. It still feels good. You can just chill out and listen to doom metal because your speakers aren't going crazy. It's not going to give you a headache. It's almost really laid back, which is really weird.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it and hear it.
I'm still a hair metal guy. That's still my
favorite. No, it's still great. Favorite. But like, you know, you want to relax or, you know, you got a kind of a headache. You don't want to listen to, you know.
No, totally.
You know,
Yeah. I introduced my kids to heavy metal this week. I mean, they kind of hear it, and like my daughter will hear me listening to stuff, especially when I'm working out, and she'll be like, is this Halloween music? I'm like, yeah, it's Halloween music. And my son, like my youngest will say, he's caught up on that. Like, this is Halloween music. But then this week I had him in the car. My wife is in the store, and I was going through drive through, and I put on, that band that I mentioned,
Stryker that you've been jacking off.
Stryker. Heck yeah, man. So I put on their album, and my kids, I'm like, horns up, kids, teaching them the metal sign, which of course my wife's probably going to love once they all do it.
Yeah. She's going to love that.
Oh yeah. And then I was just playing it, and, my middle son, he was into it. I was pretty proud of him. And then, of course, my wife got in the car, and she was just like, can you please turn this off? I can't even hear myself think.
If it was doom metal, she would have been thinking.
Right. She may have just been like, this is kind of weird, but at least I can hear myself think.
Yeah, it's different stuff.
Yeah, but we haven't had movies kind of touch on this type of thing. I guess in the horror genre, I mean, everything else is like bubblegum other than Deathgasm. Everything else dealing music is like Gem and the Holograms and bullshit like that. It's always like what's going on in the pop world now, which is just bullshit. And in a year, it'll be gone and no one will care.
You know, it's weird because horror and the metal community always go together really, really well. So it's kind of odd that we don't have more of it now, like, especially since that, nostalgia is coming back, and you know, throwback stuff, like we have the sense scores.
Yeah.
We have I really love Carpenter, so that's what I'm gonna do. And we have practical effects. But there's hardly any metal coming back. And you think it would, because I think that would be extremely, you could utilize that. It could be a catalyst to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
I always love it when there's kind of rock and roll characters in that show up randomly in films. I remember the movie Mama, and Jessica Chastain's character is kind of a rock and roller, you know?
Yeah,
a punk band or something?
I had to go to the bathroom.
She's so hot in that movie.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But yeah, she plays bass for like, you know. She reminds me of like the Brody Dahl Distillers.
Yeah,
that's what she reminded me of a little bit.
Yeah, I just want to see a movie about her, like that character.
Yeah,
you know.
So do I.
I don't think that
I'll make it with her.
Oh, speaking of Mama, our boys,
our sons, they're all grown up.
Our sons.
So Kevin, is it Kolash? Kolash.
I always pronounce his name wrong. I'm horrible.
You pronounce everybody's name wrong.
I always thought it was Kolch, but I don't know.
Hey, you could be right. Well, anyways, the Starry Eyes duo is doing Mama 2.
Yes.
Which I'm super happy for them, because it's obviously they made it into kind of the Hollywood realm, so it'll be easier for them to do in an independent movie and make a movie of theirs. You know, because I would, if someone offered me to do Mama, I would do a sequel to Mama and make it good.
I wonder if
I kind of dig the first movie. It was just, there's a couple things about that movie that really take you out of it.
Well, Dennis Widmeyer and Kevin Kolch. I always pronounce it Kolch, and I can't remember if I pronounce it right or wrong on the podcast.
I would go ahead with wrong.
Probably pronounced it wrong. But no, I probably did it right, because I probably confirmed with him before we started recording, so it wouldn't sound like a total jackass. Kolch, and these Kolch, pretty sure.
Yeah,
but we're totally going on a rabbit trail here. But I'm wondering what they'll do. I wonder if they'll try to straight follow it up, or if it's just something within that same realm. You know what I mean? Because I know they're rewriting it, so I don't know. The CGI is what took me out of the first film, and I didn't care about that ghost so much as I cared about like. The feral children girls were freaking creepy.
Yeah, the CGI was really wonky at times. But what really did it for that movie for me was the ending.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you do realize the parents are going to go to jail, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And the kid's going to end up like in a foster home, because there's no way, shape, or form that the police are going to believe exactly what happened. So these parents will be convicted of murder.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's not a happy ending.
I think this is going to be a sequel that's in name only. I highly doubt it's going to be a straight follow-up because of that first ending. I think they're probably going to take the same idea.
Like, probably a prequel with other kids or something.
Yeah.
You know, you could always do that.
But I'm excited. Our boys.
So, our sons are all grown up.
That's great.
If you're ever affiliated with a show, you're automatically part of the screencast.
Yeah. You're our best friends.
Yes.
Is there any other movies where some, like, rock and rollers have shown up? I know that that film with Kevin Bacon, he's kind of this rock and roller guy, like 90s grungist type guy, right? What movie is that? Stir of Echoes.
Yeah. I mean, there is, but there's that fine line kind mm-hmm. of with that punk rock attitude,
right,
too.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, we even have, like, Return of the Living Dead, but those, like, even, like, Scuzz and Suicide, they're all punks, but there's still kind of some metal rock and roll tendencies to that.
Well, I think around that time especially, you had a lot of punk rockers kind of blending in with the metal, because there's, if you listen to a lot of those bands, especially around the early 80s, like, there's definitely some punk and thrash in there. But yeah. Once you started with the more, once these bands started getting bigger and doing the Coliseum tours and the big shows, then it got more theatrical and epic and more, that created that more mainstream, I guess, mainstream sound. You know, it got a little less punk. But if you listen to early, I mean, I guess, well, Poison's always been kind of that sound. I'm trying to think of a band that, you know, kind of evolved. I mean, Motorhead was always, you know, kind of down and dirty.
Well, I mean, there's certain bands that played to both groups. There's bands that played to the punk crowd and, you know, rock and roll crowd, like LA Guns.
Yeah.
Was always a band that punks loved, and so did metal people. You know, you always heard, and that band turned out to be Guns N' Roses, basically. That's what it turned into. It's, you know, but all music is all one, you know, and it's, you know, it's a community. So, you know, having genres is okay, but, like, you know, saying, oh, we don't like metal, we don't like punk. No, there isn't none of that. They all kind of supported one another because they're all influenced mm-hmm. by someone. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of punk rockers influenced by Lemmy from Motorhead.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's one thing that I have always enjoyed about music is and movies is that you can make anything and you're inspired by, you know, pretty much anything that, you know, has inspired you and that transcends into your work.
Yeah, well, you're a product of your inspiration.
You know, I mean, you had, you know, I'll plug another movie. It's supposed to be coming out in the next few months. It was on my top 10, but it was the movie Krisha. And that's a full-fledged weird drama. But you could totally tell that this guy was influenced by, like, old Hammer movies and old horror films like Amityville and, you know, The Haunting and stuff like that, just because how the movie works and the soundtrack. And, like, you feel, like, when you're watching it, you're like, is Krisha going to be a vampire or a werewolf? Because that's the vibe I'm getting. And it's totally not that movie. However, that's how it's set up. And it gives you this unsettling. And that's what it is. It's supposed to be. It's supposed to be unsettling and unnerving what you're seeing because you're watching a family drama. But the director is so influenced from horror films that is all over the screen. And it's a beautiful thing. And he even said, you know, I'm my favorite movies are horror films and, like, John Carpenter. Well, you could totally tell without him saying, hey, this is my homage to John Carpenter. No, you can easily show that you're inspired by something. And it's the same thing that goes for music.
Awesome.
So
very cool. One last thing about Demons. Did they continue the heavy metal soundtracks through the sequels?
No, the sequel is strictly Demons 2 is strictly new wave.
Oh, that's right.
Like, it's like Gene Loves Jezebel, Love and Rockets, Dead Can Dance, The Cult. No, it's 100% new wave. It completely goes against all that other shit.
I haven't even seen all the other ones. I think Demons 3 was a made-for-TV film, apparently.
No, I don't think so. That was the church, the ogre.
The ogre.
The sect, I think, is the other
name. Is the church kind of loosely related to the Demons films?
No, it turns out to be kind of how the House series played out.
Gotcha.
Is that they were still demons.
Oh, okay.
In the line, but like they didn't have to deal with like the mask and coming back like that. It was a different story.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think there's like 7 films in the Demons world, but none of them really correlate with the other first, you know.
Weird. Yeah, I mean, what I'm reading here is like the church is considered the official Demons 3, but there was a made-for-TV called The Ogre.
Okay, maybe then the church is the sect, and the ogre is something else. I forget. That's when you get
it's
into
all
Italian
confusing, man.
Like that. I always forget.
Because then there's Black Demons, The Devil's Daughter, Mask of the Demon.
Black Demons is good, though. But it, again, has nothing to do with kind of how that's set up. I mean, even the sequel was a remake in itself. Like, it wasn't a direct sequel. I mean, you had Bobby Rhodes, who dies as Tony in the first film, but he's back as, you know, the head weightlifter. One of the security guards in the film is the guy that is the leader of the four that's doing coke.
Gotcha.
You know, so they even use, I think there's even some more actors that show up. Like, it was just a remake. You know,
right.
not even a sequel. It's kind of bizarre how that happened. I think they were just kind of trying to do it in a demon story, you know, almost like making like an anthology of a series of films.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Crazy. That's the thing about Italian cinema is it would be released as a sequel, but really be nothing, have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right, cool. Are you ready to move into Stream Screams?
Whatever you want.
Let's jump into Stream Screams.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
If you scream, I'll bring you back.
Don't scream, miss. Don't scream.
Alright, we are talking, and I'm pretty excited, dude. Thank you for showing this movie to me. Turbulence 3, Heavy Metal.
The stage is set.
Right now I'm boarding Z-Web TV's specially designed, absolutely radical 747 flying music station. It's like no airplane you've ever seen.
Why don't you log on to the site and see if we can't get a train?
Craven's on.
Yes!
You got a bite.
Let's take this hacker down.
We'll have field ops handle it tomorrow. It's not our job.
So what do you think of this guy's music?
It makes me think of Nam.
30,000 feet above the ground.
Are you sure you're up for the ride?
200 fans on board.
Well, then let's party. Woo!
10 million watching online.
Self-proclaimed Dark Angel Blaine Craven!
Oh my god.
From 2001.
It's so weird, man.
Wow.
I remember seeing Turbulence in theaters.
The original was with Ray Liotta.
Yeah, Ray Liotta and Lauren Holly.
Yeah.
And I think that I saw that the same day I saw Halloween. I want to say Halloween 6. Or maybe, I'm sorry. It was that and The Relic. I saw The Relic and Turbulence in the same day because my mom really wanted to see Turbulence and I really wanted to see The Relic. But I also wanted to see Turbulence because it was, you know, kind of a, like a serial killer thing.
Yeah.
A really ridiculous movie. Sequel came out years later, direct to video. No one really remember. I didn't know there was a sequel until Heavy Metal Turbulence 3 came out.
Yeah, I had no idea. Tom Berenger's in this one in Turbulence 2.
And what year did Part 3 come out?
Part 3 is 2001. Turbulence 2 is 1999.
Okay, So I think that I started to work at Blockbuster, and it was a couple of years after the movie was out, and I remember seeing it, and somebody said, "Dude, have you seen Turbulence 3? And I said, "No. Why would I want to watch Turbulence 3? Because at that point, I was like a sequel snob.
Yeah.
You know, even had no idea what I was talking about. And I was like sticking up for Turbulence for some weird reason. And I was like, no. And they're like, "Dude, watch." And I was like, "No, do we have a sequel?" And they're like, "No, we actually don't. But just watch the third one. It doesn't have to do anything with the other ones." And I'm like, whatever. So I rent it that night. And this is like, you know, 2002, 2003 or whatever. And I'm just sitting there thinking, what the fuck am I watching? Craig Sheffer is dancing at one point, and yeah. He is a hacker, you know, and it's just an odd, a really odd movie. And it was one of those things that I watch periodically.
Yeah.
And I didn't watch it for years. I watched it every once because it was one of those, like, you know, so bad, so good movies. And I would like tell people to watch it just to kind of fuck with them. And then when I did the heavy metal horror a couple years ago, or a few years ago, I was like, "Oh shit, I'm gonna rewatch that." And I did. And I'm like, "Man, this is so fucking entertaining. It's ridiculously fun for this silly made-for-TV movie."
Yeah, it's the setup is hilarious. It's early 2000s, right? We're just during that time getting used to the internet, apparently. And then an internet video. And so the setup is this rock and roll band, led by Slade Craven.
Slade Craven, which is an obvious nod to Marilyn Manson.
Of course, totally. And it's this goth metal band, and it's going to be their last concert for some reason. And are they going to go play at a venue and broadcast it? No, they're going to go on a plane and broadcast their concert on this specially made plane that has
a huge concert hall in it.
Has a concert hall in it. And broadcast it on the internet.
Mm.
And of course, there's a hacker involved. Is this the same time? When did the hackers come out? Late 90s, 97?
Yeah. Something like that. Late 90s, yeah.
So, you know, so of course there's this hacker, gets sucked into everything with the FBI, and
someone ends up dying. You have to really kind of push that Craig Sheffer is a hacker who is wearing the hacker attire with with the little circle like lenses that are purple.
Of course. And he has the handkerchief on his head, bandana on his head that matches his shirt.
Yeah, that sits, you know, at a computer in the middle of his like house that has the biggest, like, bulkiest monitors possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, it whenever you see anything on the screen, you're like, "Oh man, video games like from early 2000s had those graphics." You know, and it's such a bizarre story because, yeah, we have this band who's doing their last concert, and only like 40 members or 40 people were selected,
right?
And what the hell are you doing? Like, how is that a plot? Like, you have to think, do they really think that was a good idea? Like, hey, where do we set this movie? Oh, we set it in the air.
Right. Because
it's turbulence. Dude, fucking land the plane and play, like, the airstrip or something.
Yeah, an airstrip would be much more epic, and you can still film the thing.
And that's the weirdest part, is that we had technology in this movie that kind of doesn't exist right now.
Yeah.
And, or it's really, really difficult would be able to do. So they're in the air. Are they like below a certain altitude, or are they like in the air?
They said 30,000 feet.
And they are live streaming
mm-hmm.
this concert to people's screens, and like the views are going up like every 100,000. Yeah. And they're like, Slade's not playing. Views are dropping, and it's like 100,000 views at a time.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. The internet, like, I think you even said the internet's so fucking funny in the early days because people didn't understand it, so filmmakers could do whatever they want.
They're just treating it like a live broadcast, like broadcasting television.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, how things are set up.
Yeah.
Like, how easy everything looks and, you know, all these, like, different types. Like, put something on the screen that people don't understand so they think we're hacking. You know, watch movies like The Net or Hackers and think, like, wow, computers really don't work like that or never have.
Right.
You know, like, people are, like, are in some DOS program hacking into the White House. Like, what the fuck is happening?
Dude, we still have that in the Fast and Furious movies.
Oh, God.
With who's the hacker in the Fast and Furious movies?
Tej.
Who's playing him? Ja Rule?
Ludacris.
Ludacris. No. Ja Rule, Ludacris. I don't know.
Wow.
Ludacris. But he's like...
Okay.
But yeah, he's hacking into stuff like it's nothing.
Yeah, it always drives me crazy. But, you know, those movies have some silliness to them. But whenever people are serious about it, and, you know, they're just typing as fast as they can, you know, it's like, exactly what are you doing? Most things you could just take the mouse and, like, click. Like, I was watching the new Fantastic Four movie, and when they're in, like, the other realm, and they're trying to pull, she's trying to pull them back, dude, she is on the keyboard just fucking typing as fast. Like, the actresses, they're just like, just mash the keyboard.
Right. Yeah, I mean, nobody, like, does that.
And there's like 30 seconds of it. It's like, you know, if you hit one wrong key, you're fucked, right? I mean,
they did that. You would back in, like, maybe.
Were you programming code or something?
Right, like, exactly.
Were you, like, making you would an have app to be for iPhone?
In Terminal or DOS or whatever, just going at it. But nobody does that anymore.
It's like, I'm pretty sure, like, all. If any technology that you had, you would just take your mouse and then click. Or you probably even have touchscreen at NASA.
Yeah.
Fuck, you know, you probably have a laptop, you can touch the screen, so just double tap something and open. But it's like they're rewriting code or something like that.
That's great. Yeah, you so know? That's definitely a huge part of Turbulence 3. But let's...
it's like this, you hear, all right, at the mainframe, open this door, all right, we're in, got it, and it's like, what there the fuck go. Did you do?
I just hacked into the TV show, now I'm watching, and now I have access to every single camera throughout the plane. Oh my gosh, did someone just get killed? I think someone got killed. Nah, no one got killed. I think someone just got killed. Nah, no one got killed at all. Don't even worry about it. That's pretty much the setup of the plot. And then Slade Craven takes the stage, does a song, and for certain, and he gets this guy up on stage and pretends to kill the guy on stage.
Because he does, because they're like, oh, Slade Craven's known for killing his fans. Fake. It's all fake.
But it's all fake. But it's never once are you like, oh, did he really kill him? Because it's like, well, that's what he's known for. Until he goes backstage for some reason and gets hit over the head only to reemerge.
Dude, what is up with that makeup, dude?
The makeup's horrible.
Like,
it's goth.
They are obviously, no, but they're putting prosthetics on.
Oh, there's definitely prosthetics. And I think they do it for a reason.
Because
this guy on stage may or may not be the real Slade Craven, even though he looks exactly like him.
There is so many major plot holes in this movie to the point where you're scratching your – like, you don't even ask questions. Because, like, you sit there and you're like, oh, wow. Like, that's obviously a mistake. Are they going to – no, they're not going to address that. No. Moving on, let's just enjoy the movie for what it's worth.
Yeah, oh, and by the way, Rutger Hauer is in this.
Yeah. I believe, not just to clarify, because a lot of people say that, but I don't believe it's Rutger. I think it's Rutger Hauer.
Is it Rutger Hauer?
That's what I've heard. Is that true?
I don't know, man. You're asking the guy who pronounces things wrong a lot of the times.
No.
I would say Rutger Hauer, but I could be wrong.
All right, you have the dude from Split Second. You have, you know, Craig Sheffer, which I love anything that Craig Sheffer's in. He is hilarious. And then you have that Joe whatever, Montana, whatever his name is. I always
forget. Oh, Joe Mann plays Slade Craven. Oh, no. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Joe Mantegna.
Yeah, whatever that guy is. He's in every
CBS CSI or whatever type show ever. That's where you find him on network TV.
I mean, you do kind of have a bigger cast for this movie, which is kind of funny. You know, I'm not saying that they're, you know, box office draws or anything, but they are, you know, well known.
There's even one guy that's really familiar. He looks familiar. He's the guy that gets killed on the quote unquote killed on stage.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a lot of shit. I always see him pop up. Zach Santiago.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I saw him. I was like, I know that guy. What's he been in? He's been in like a ton of stuff. But it's like one of those things. Like I've seen him in a lot of things, but I can't really place where I've seen him. But he looks so familiar.
So a fun fact. This is also released by Trimark.
Mm-hmm.
Trimark Pictures, who released a lot of weird and kind of awful movies, but some really cool ones at the same time. But this is the last film they released. This definitely made them not have any. Thing else.
Yeah.
Which is funny because their very first film, I believe, if you look it up, because Trimark was always one of those companies that I was drawn to the movies, but they're not that great.
Yeah, they're like a little better than Canon movies.
Yeah, you had like Warlock, you had, you know, Leprechaun mm-hmm. films, you had Dead Alive, what was that movie with the fucking kid from Radio Flyer where he's like a robot or some shit? Star Kid.
Star Kid.
Yeah. You had, I think Dolly Dearest might have been one. You had Pinocchio's Revenge. You had like all those like Rumpelstiltskin.
Right.
I believe was another one of those. The Dentist. You know, yeah, it was very like, this was like the 2000, like it was in the late, you know, the middle, late 90s
yeah.
for these films, but they were still using that 80s like mentality.
Totally.
You know?
Yep.
But I was going to say their very first film, I believe, was Going Overboard, the Adam Sandler movie. That's absolutely awful. I mean, that's an understatement. It's one of the worst Adam Sandler movies, if you can believe it. Which, how do you categorize? I don't know how you categorize Adam Sandler movies. They're all pretty awful. Well, anyways, that's their first film.
Shit.
That's their first film, and their last one is Turbulence 3. So they open with Going Overboard and end with Turbulence 3. That kind of shows the reason why the company isn't around anymore. Or sold all their films to Lionsgate. So
yeah, I think all their stuff, Lionsgate owns all their stuff.
Yeah, Lionsgate owns all of this.
Yeah.
Which, you know, another thing, this is available on Vudu, on HD, and actually looks pretty damn good.
Yeah, I was surprised.
For being a HD. It's a little expensive because I think it's $10 to buy.
Yeah, $10.
But it's, you know, cheap to rent, like one of those two. Most of those movies that we talk about, their rentals are like $2.99.
Yeah.
Or $3.99 HD. But yeah, it definitely looks probably, I mean, it's fucking Turbulence 3. I mean, how good do you want Turbulence 3 to look? Because the clearer it is, the freakier this Slade Craven character looks. To the point where it's kind of scary.
Yeah. Apparently, when the other Slade Craven arrives, they used a different actor to do the voice. So they had a separate ADR for evil Slade Craven. If you pay attention.
Actually, like, that's a musician, right? Do they get a real musician for the Slade Craven character?
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know who this John Mann is. He's one of those kind of character actor guys that shows up in, you know, is like a henchman or something like that. I mean, his filmography is like Underworld Evolution, Chronicles of Riddick, stuff like that. But he's never a main character at all. He's always kind of just some henchman or somebody, you know, in the background. I think I think this was his only like starring role, because he becomes the star of the movie.
He is the front man for some folk band. So I don't listen. I didn't know that he was, because I thought serious? I remember. Yeah, he's actually a musician on the side, and then he does acting, and he had minor roles. And
wow.
So apparently he's big into like Stargate and Battlestar Galactica as well.
He does have a solo album, lead vocalist of the band Spirit of the West. Look them up.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I will.
But this had to have been his biggest role, because he basically plays. I mean, are we going to? I mean, this is kind of a.
Do we not care about
spoilers? He basically plays the good guy and the villain.
But he plays Marilyn Manson. What, or I guess we should say this, what society thought Marilyn Manson was. Like, let's put all steel and black leather on him.
Right.
And just clown makeup.
Right. But he turns out to be a good guy, eventually.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, it's funny. It's the same thing as how, you know, the same thing as computers are viewed in movies, how stuff like, you know, goth people are represented in movies. It's totally off base.
Yeah, I guarantee you, because it shows them in the back, like before they got to go on, and they're all mysterious and let's go. And what are they doing in the what you would call the green room or whatever? Like, they're just kind of hanging out before the show. One guy's making out with chicks or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but there's one guy that's eating. Like, we get to watch him eating, and right. Another guy's like playing like acoustic guitar.
Okay, it's not doing anything crazy. I mean, all the behind the scenes stuff I've been in with bands, it's like the singer's playing like Tiger Woods golf, the bass player and drummer playing cards, and then like, you know, the bassist is on the phone with his wife.
Yeah,
and then they get up and they go on stage and then they put on the "We're Rock and Rollers," you know. But
I think this is a missed opportunity to put a real band in the movie.
Oh yeah,
I mean they could have, you know, because at this point in time in the 80s and or the late 90s and early 2000s, we had a lot of musicians like show up in movies. I mean, we started having Flea everywhere.
Right? Yeah.
You know, I remember in one of my favorite vampire movies of all time, The Forsaken, they like put the band Orgy like as characters
of
in the movie.
Of course Orgy would be in there.
Yeah. I don't even think they had a song in the movie. You know, but I'm trying to remember some others, but it was kind of the same thing like with Trick or Treat, you know. They threw Ozzy and Gene Simmons in the film, and they're only in the film for, you know, maybe a total of a minute.
Yep.
So this guy is a front man to a band, but a band that probably a lot of people have never heard of.
Yeah. Well, apparently he can, I mean, at least he can sing, I guess.
Right. Well, that's the thing is like the music in this is kind of like nu metal. Like it reminds me a lot of Godhead. From back in the day, like Cold Chamber, Godhead type of sound. And the music isn't all that bad in the film, which is kind of bizarre to say because the movie's so weird and low budget and kind of shitty. But it's fun.
I kind of believe they would be a band. Like, I was like, I had no problems, you know, suspending any disbelief with the band, because I was like, well, they sound just like a 90s, late 90s goth band. You know, I mean, it was. You know, borderline on parody, which I think they were kind of trying to do that a little bit, but
well, that's the thing is, you say goth band, but
well, you know, whatever you would consider.
Is there really goth music? In the 90s and early 2000s?
Some people do. Some people say, you know, The Cure was the first goth band.
That's new wave to me.
I know. I don't know. Like
the dark and gloomy aspect to it. is goth.
Makes it goth. It's more of the attitude, I guess. I always considered it metal. I mean, Nine Inch Nails, Marilyn Manson, all that stuff, I still kind of considered heavy metal.
Right, and it's like borderline industrial. But yeah. I think goth music always like is a term that isn't really defined at all. I don't think there really is goth music. It's industrial, it's new wave, it's metal that gets shoved into this, you know, hair over the eyes, dark eyeliner, black lipstick, bunch of change, and Junkos, you know, hanging out, mall core kids that would hang out at the mall and just, like, stand by FYE and buy clothes at Hot Topic. You know, those were your goth kids. But as far as music, like, I mean, it might have, like, gothic undertones, but, you know, like, Typo Negative is not a fucking goth band. They're fucking doom metal. So, you know, I think it's a term of music that doesn't really, I don't think anything is considered goth music. I just think it falls under those kids, you know, because, I mean, do adults even do that? Like, is that still a thing? Do people dress up like that anymore?
Occasionally I'll see people dressed up. I saw a hipster dad today. With the, I guess those are the new goths, are the hipster dads. Hipster guys.
They're the new mallcore kids.
I guess so. I don't know. He was outside of LA. What's that place in LA where everyone hangs out? Dang it. I can't think. Anyway.
I don't know, man. I don't live in LA.
Yeah, it's a certain area where all the artsy fartsies hang out, and that's where you find the most.
Oh, I know. I think I know what you're talking. I don't know the name, but I remember hearing.
Silver Lake.
Silver Lake. That's
Silver Lake. That's
so
hipster
town. I think
Bria
Grant mentioned that when she was on the show. Said the Silver Lake kids.
I saw a Silver Lake type person at my daughter's ballet class today, and you know, okay, so that's the new dress up, right? Because it's just so much work to get a look going.
Yeah, that's
the
thing.
Am I just sounding old?
No.
I've always been like rock and roll punk rock, where it's like fucking t-shirt and jeans, man. That's been my...
Yeah, you know. I think that's another... I think hips, like, if you really want to get into... I think it's another term that's not really defined too well.
I hate using the word hipster, but everyone uses it, so.
I mean, people, like, they consider... Like, people, like, kids that wear, like, the purple glasses but don't have any lenses in them that are wearing, you know, some tight, like, checkered t-shirt with short shorts and, like, you know, Van shoes that listen to the Shins, that's hipster.
With but a also, mustache.
But
or
also,
a, you know.
But here's the thing, but also the guy that dresses like a lumberjack with a big beard that's doing something weird to his mustache is also a hipster.
I guess.
I think it's just, I think it's a loose term to...
Isn't anyone going out of the way to be noticed, but they all
that's kind of
look
what
similar,
I think it is,
so...
Right?
I don't know. But then again, I dress boring. Like, during the work week now, I mean, you know, I'm almost 40. So here, gather around, kids. The old guys are talking. But, you know, I wear a button-down shirt, and I get to wear jeans. But then on the weekends, it's... You know, black t-shirt and jeans and Chucks.
Yeah,
and that's
but
been
I,
my.
Yeah, my, but that's your style. You're not going out of your way to try to be different.
I've always looked for something simple. I mean, I went through my crazy the Junkos, and I went through this spiky bleach hair, and I went through the, you know, the bead neck, the big old like metal necklaces, and
I think that's,
you know,
part of just
everyone
trying
goes
to find
to that.
Yourself.
Yeah.
You know,
but when you see those guys,
I think that's what hipster is now.
Right.
It's like,
but
they
if
don't
you see,
have a style.
But once you see somebody who's kind of, you know, moved past their 20s, kind of the exploratory stage, right? And you see them in like a normal, like at the school picking up their kids, you know, they really do. That stands out a little bit. And you kind of wonder, you know, what's going on. You're hanging on.
This has been Heavy Metal Horror. Talk about hipsters and hipsters on the screencast.
This is just me being cranky and old. And in a few years, I'll sound, in a few more years, I'll probably sound more like Mike McPadden to just say, you know, fuck everything.
That guy, he just tells it like it is.
Dude.
Which I like.
I didn't want to cause any arguments, but I held my tongue.
I bet he's a fucking hell to fucking argue with. Jesus. But I like it, though. He is a fucking, he has the metal attitude.
Stick to your guns, man. Stick to your guns with what you believe.
Mike McPadden, I'm just going to say right now, is officially super punk rock.
Totally.
So.
All right. Well, Turbulence 3, everyone. Give it a rent.
Heavy metal.
Give it a rent. I think it's fun, man.
You won't be disappointed.
It's a good time. It's a bad good time.
I don't think I've heard anybody say they didn't like Turbulence 3.
It's entertaining as shit.
It's one of those films that need to make a comeback.
It does.
Well, I'm going to do a theatrical run of Turbulence 3.
I don't care about Turbulence 1 or Turbulence 2. Give me Turbulence 3 on Collector's Edition Blu-ray.
Never will happen.
I know. All right. Next week, for sure, we will do a drawing for a Screamcast mug and some Coffee Shop of Horrors coffee. And maybe a couple more goodies. I'm not sure.
So if you buy anything from Grindhouse Video using the coupon code Screamcast10 and show us that basically the invoice of your order, you get entered. Anything from Coffee Shop of Horrors using the code Screamcast, you get entered. And if you donate to Tex Montana, their Kickstarter is still happening.
Fuck yeah.
You get entered into the contest.
And if also, if you Mondo.
Send Sean dick pics.
No. Shush. No. Mondo is releasing the Wolfman of Mars Gamasu on vinyl.
Whoa.
So you're going to want to check that out. And also, I believe Kevin Spencer is still selling some of his artwork. I said his website wrong last week.
Whoa.
So I may have sent you to a porn site. And if so, I apologize.
Did you say sperm spatters?
No.
Because that would have been fucked up.
Because I think one time I said the wrong thing, and then he made a joke that, dude, you just send people to a porn site. And I'm not sure if he's wrong or not, because I was at work, so I wasn't about to mess with it. But his website is inkspatters.com. That's the art of Kevin Spencer. I think I said .net last time.
Ooh, but, God, I know that site.
Check out his store, and he has posters and t-shirts and things like that. So if you buy anything from him, basically, if you support any of our sponsors as far as purchasing something from them, email us, readme@thescreamcast.com. And, of course, if you support Tex Montana, email us the transaction, a picture proving that you did it. We'll enter everyone into the drawing, and we'll do a huge-ass drawing, because I think I have a whole bunch already of people who've been doing this. We'll have a drawing next week. Also, if you have, I want to say if you've left try these video messages out on this jog thing, but we'll leave that out for now. Well, once we start getting more people doing that, I'll start including them or figure out a way to do a drawing with that. But keep an eye on our Twitter, Scream_cast. I want to do a jog thing again and just try to get more content. I mean, this week there's only one person. But it's fun. I think it's a fun addition to the show, and it's a way to get you guys, your voices on here, and it's just a fun way to interact. If you don't want to be videotaped, put your hand over the fucking lens and just talk. All I need is your voice if you really don't want to be videotaped. All right. I think it's going to do it for this week's show.
Yeah.
Got some great interviews coming up in the next couple weeks. Stay tuned to our social media for all the scoops on that, and we'll definitely let you know what movies we may be covering. So if you want to play along with things as far as what we're watching, just interact with us on there, Facebook and Twitter. I think Twitter is the best way to get hold of us. We're also on Horror Amino.
Yes.
What's our username there? Just Screamcast?
I think so. So Horror Amino is kind of like just a horror app. It's free. Horror community. you just have to kind of like find your group. Yeah, it's the Scream. It's a Screamcast, but yeah. The space Screamcast. I don't know. It's kind of cool because there's kind of this one group that does a lot of pop like horror, like who's a better villain, Freddy or Jason? You know, so you get a lot of really stupid posts like that. But there is kind of a group that does focus on, you know, kind of the rarities and, you know, the darker side of horror. But you can find us on there. We don't do anything special. We just kind of post our reviews and, you know, the episodes and kind of whatever's on the site. We'll start being more interactive. We will talk to you and answer you. We will have more content up there eventually, but right now we're just kind of trying it out to see how it is. But I like it. It's a horror community.
It confuses me a little bit.
Well, here's the thing is that Twitter and Facebook are the most negative places in the world, it seems, right now.
Yeah.
This is a pretty positive environment.
Awesome.
So that's something that's the reason why I like it more than Twitter, because every time I pull up Twitter, I see someone harassing somebody or just shitting all over something.
Yeah.
Or I see something about Donald Trump.
Ugh, fuck
and
that guy.
It, the kind of the same thing goes for Facebook. And I just honestly, I can't deal with it right now. So I kind of just, if you want to get a hold of us, message us or, you know, mention us, because I'm not scrolling through anything.
Awesome. So. All right. Well, check us out there. And of course, thescreamcast.com is the hub for all this goodness. Check us out there. We should have a lot more stories and content coming out on there. There's some women in horror stories that will be, or articles that are pending for us to post. So be checking back. Some good stuff that we're going to post. Otherwise, all you guys have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. But it's just begun.
Oh, because we're like in the middle of the episode and yeah. I just totally fucked it up.
Yeah,
cool.
I'll fix it.
All right.
It's all good.
No. Just leave it in there. Leave it in there to show how much of a dick I really am.